John Baxter with Bob Swicklin. The book is Sheridan's Secret Mission, How the South Won the War After the Civil War. This is the drama that I did not have until I read Bob's book. How is it that the success of the Civil War for the Union side, for freeing the slaves, for holding the Union together, how is it that it turned into what became, for the balance of the century, into more than half of the 20th century and beyond, a brutal, segregated South? How did that happen? Here is the story. The White Leaguers of Louisiana have arranged in some fashion that it appears that Union troops have interfered in the legislation of a sovereign state. This is extremely shocking to the way Congress understands its role at the time, then. We've had a lot of history since then. Bob, we need to go to the telegrams, the banditti telegrams that General Sheridan, and not very much disguised, sends to his boss, the Secretary of War, Mr. Belknap. The one I like, he sends one out on the 4th right away. But on the 5th is the one I like, and I'll read the line that becomes a rallying cry for the villains. If Congress would pass a bill declaring them banditti, they could be tried by a military commission. The ringleaders of this banditti, who murdered men here on the 14th of last September, and also more recently in Vicksburg, Mississippi, should, in justice to law and order and the peace and prosperity of this southern part of the country, be punished. It is possible that if the president would issue a proclamation declaring them banditti, no further action need be taken except that which would devolve upon me. In other words, our hero is ready to ride just the way he did in the Shenandoah Valley. He's ready to ride, and he has the army to do it, and he'll arrest every one of them and put them on trial as military prisoners, as men who have been outlaws on military prisoners. I think, Bob, the way this telegram reads, he means to hang them.
Well, there were a lot of Southerners who read it the same way. And now you picture a guy. Sheridan was a hero in the North. He was a Civil War hero. But he rolled into town on vacation, trying not to make a big noise. And here he is announcing to the world that he wants to ride after these White Leaguers. Now, White Leaguers were more or less, from the South's point of view, respectable citizens. They weren't wearing hoods like the Ku Klux Klan of years earlier. They were basically had a much better public image. And the idea of first of Northern troops clanking through a Southern state legislature and yanking Southern lawmakers out of forcefully yanking them out, that didn't sit well with Northerners. The idea of Sheridan popping off like this, saying, "I want to arrest these White Leaguers. I want to put them on trial." This is basically, in people's minds, they're thinking, this sounds like a kangaroo court situation here. So the reaction to Sheridan, the war hero's intervention at this moment, was highly negative. It set off if memory serves, they were meetings called indignation meetings in several cities in the North, denouncing him for doing this. And this, the impetus for some of this was just a weariness with the entire Civil War project after all these years, and with continually having to intervene in the South to put down violence against African Americans. There was some weariness against that. But this is also after years of Southerners smearing white carpetbaggers in the South, saying that they were there to just cause trouble and, you know, to reap, to make a killing, cheating people and everything. So for many reasons, Sheridan's intervention, Sheridan's banditti telegram didn't go over well with the Northern public. That was this episode basically became one of the most destructive episodes as far as souring public opinion on the entire project of guaranteeing enforcing the rights of African Americans after the Civil War and during Reconstruction. This was a big wound to that entire effort, a big setback.
Let's go to the Missouri Senator Carl Schurz, a hero of the Revolution of 1848 in Europe. He fled rather than be shot down. And he's now a senator from Missouri who was a Civil War hero as well. But on several days later, I believe it's on the 11th of January, he makes a well-announced speech in the U.S. Senate denouncing Sheridan, denouncing Grant, denouncing the Union Army, saying this intervention is unconstitutional and lawless. I would think the quotes here are again and again. So what you introduced me to, Bob, is the opportunism that the Republican Party took on this episode. It's not just Democrats now. Everybody's going to turn it into a useful tool to advance their own cause. What did Schurz want to achieve by telling a tale that wasn't quite accurate?
Well, I think his motivations have remained in question for a long time. I don't think anybody has really nailed it down, but you can look at just the basic political motivations. You know, Carl Schurz is now a senator from Missouri. Now, he has lost his bid for reelection in the previous election, but one can assume he's still responding to a largely, and senators at that moment were chosen by the state legislature, not by popular vote. But he's still responding to cues from his constituents, which are Southern white men, mainly. And so there's also the idea that among many Republicans that, okay, Reconstruction has gone on long enough. You know, maybe it's time to pare back. Maybe there was a feeling afoot that you just couldn't change these hard attitudes of Southern whites in such a brief period of time, that it might take a generation or two before they were willing to accept this project. So whatever he was of the opinion, I believe, that to a militarized presence in the South after all these years was counterproductive. And although he was very supportive of it immediately after the war, on the other hand, immediately after the war, he didn't have a Southern constituency. He wasn't a senator from Missouri. I'm not sure where I forget where he was living at that point, but I think it was in the North. In any case, his motives are a little bit open to question, but it was clear that he was not supportive of continuing aggressive Reconstruction measures.
Grant has to make a decision. Sheridan is sent via Belknap that I will take charge of this, and Grant knows what that means. Remember, Sheridan burned the valley in order to win the war. This is a man who practices total war. So Grant has a decision to make, and he needs to address his cabinet before, and we're now January 13th. All this is happening within days.
Well, Grant has been called upon by the United States Senate to explain his actions, the actions of the United States forces in Louisiana. And so he's got to respond to the Senate. And it's widely believed that in that response, he will also state his position on the program that Sheridan has laid out in his banditti telegrams, which the entire nation has read at this point. And they've all read that Sheridan wants to go down there and round up all these white leaguers and the people who are threatening the newly won rights of African Americans, that Sheridan is calling for them to be rounded up and tried before military tribunals. Right. And to get the situation under control. when Grant addresses Congress, it is believed that he will also address that proposal. And he indeed does. Grant goes before the Congress. Notably, he does not apologize for what the United States military forces did in Louisiana. And he said, look, if you don't want, I mean, words to the effect of, if you don't want soldiers restoring order, then don't send, you know, a mob into the legislature to take it over, or words to that effect. And he cited a lot of atrocities that had happened in the South that were still unresolved. The murderers of Colfax still had not been brought to justice. Various other, horrible atrocities there was apparently no way to bring these people to justice. He commented to that effect. But when it came to Sheridan's proposal for more aggressive action by Northern forces, he said, look, maybe what he proposed is not strictly legal right now. He's not a lawyer. He's a soldier. But if it were legal, in other words, if the legislation could be produced to give extraordinary powers to the government, as it had been a few years earlier, then Grant had no doubt that it would work. But he did not endorse it.
The Enforcement Act that we now remember as the Ku Klux Klan Act, that expired in 1871. So we'd need Congress to vouchsafe, again, federal interference in a local election process. This is the way it was seen from Washington.
What had expired in particular was the ability of Grant to set aside the writ of habeas corpus as he combated vigilante terrorism. That had expired. Much of the rest of the legislation had been cast under a cloud by the judge's opinion I mentioned earlier.
So here are two heroes, Grant, who saved the Union, and Sheridan, who saved Grant. And the decision must be made, and it's now the 13th of January. And when we come back, surprise. Bob Swicklick, Robert Swicklick, is the author of Sheridan's Secret Mission, How the South Won the War After the Civil War. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.